Welcome to On the Brink Radio number 282. This is Jeff Phillips Weferson coming at you from Aotea, Great Barrier Island, New Zealand, where I just arrived about 3 days ago. It's really nice to be back here on my very favorite island in the world and the closest place I have to a home probably ever in my life. But it's been kind of a shock since I've been back to experience the level of ambient noise that seems to be almost the new normality here, which is even a change. I've been noticing the encroachment and an increase in anthropogenic noises of different kinds over the past 12 years since I've been coming here, and I monitor it closely, get in trouble with other people for daring to speak my mind, for just bringing it up, that it might be an issue or a problem. And something I've dealt with in several radio shows before. I did a very interesting show on the South Island of New Zealand a few months ago about actually inadvertently finding myself in a low noise reserve at the Rainbow Valley community in the Golden Bay area of the South Island. That was quite miraculous and wonderful of an experience. But so now I've been so much looking forward to getting back to Aotea and relaxing and spreading out and being able to catch up on all my long overdue creative projects in my own space, close to nature. But I can't believe the amount of noise I've been exposed to in the past 3 days. The sources of the noises themselves are nothing new. But what is new is the amount of it that was going on continuously, which I've really never experienced here before. The only time that I had that much continuous anthropogenic noise at a significant level that you can't not pay attention to it. I mean, I'm talking a serious level that would cause you to have to raise your voice if you want to have a conversation. But for the past 3 days, I've experienced that for about probably at least 6 or 7 hours a day, mainly yesterday and the day before, and to a good degree today. It's primarily this guy up on the hill, almost a kilometer away in line of sight, using a reed eater to chop down the whole giant hillside. So imagine the sound of a reed eater, or whippersnappers, they call it, being carried, and just running continuously for about 6 hours. So you've got that. Then much closer, only about 100 meters away, in the lot across the street, has been a guy the past 3 days using a chainsaw, cutting up logs or cutting down trees or something, and then every little bit he would turn on this grotesquely overpowered wood chipper machine. And I mean, this is like, I can't give a figure in dB, but, and it's quite relative, you know, so the perceived sound level and how loud it sounds to somebody and how annoying it might be or damaging to their hearing, it's very relative. You can't really put a specific number on there. I mean, you can, but it doesn't really mean that much. But it's very, very, very noticeable. Then yesterday, this is the two things that were going on pretty much continuously, which especially this time of year, like in the dead of winter, you don't normally have that. And then, of course, you've got the planes that come periodically, and Great Barrier Airlines, as I mentioned before, is actually known for its archaic planes that they use. There's no one can remember it, but they're known for being like chainsaws in the sky in terms of their loudness. And so you've got this going on, and then you've got multiple windows of when you've got two or three of these different noises going at the same time. So yesterday I was over there trying to record some bird songs, and it sounded like the tui was, I don't know, it sounded to me like it was trying to compensate for the sound of the chainsaw and the wood chipper. But like I tell my friends, all my work on behalf of noise and bioacoustics and sound issues and stuff, it's not even so much that it's about me. Of course, I'm the one hearing the sounds, and I notice. And I'm not the average person in the sense of my bioacoustic awareness and sensitivity. But I say that if I can hear it, regardless of being annoyed or bothered by it, if I can hear it, there's a very, very good chance that any other being that uses sound can probably hear it too. Maybe even more intensively than I can. Because birds primarily use sound and song to communicate, right? That's kind of like a given. And so, if I can't hear the birds for the noise, the chances are that they can't hear each other because of the noise. And there was even an Auckland researcher last year who was giving a talk on the radio about precisely how she had observed that the tui seemed to be struggling to overcome the noise in the more urban areas closer to Auckland. We're 100 kilometers away. But even though this island advertises itself as a beautiful, remote nature, off-the-grid tourist destination, now, with the added bonus of being an internationally acclaimed dark sky sanctuary, which to me is basically just a crock of tourism propaganda designed to draw tourists here. We've even got these people that are behind it who printed this book that's got a bunch of kind of mediocre astronomical photographs. And it's not talking about loving the stars and astronomy and the beauty of nature. It's about the fact that they've done all this stuff and got this island acclaimed with an official certificate as an international dark sky sanctuary. It's the exact same as seeing the word eco on a tourism brochure. That's all it is. And so then I was actually quite shocked to read the words of Izzy Fordham, who is the chairperson of the Great Barrier Council, which is intimately allied with the Auckland Council. But in the introduction to this book, she pretty much says, oh, Auckland's got 1.6 million people on our doorstep here on Great Barrier Island. We'd be really happy if all of these people would come and visit the island here so that they can help protect our dark sky environment. That's pretty much almost an exact quote. What kind of sense does that make? What kind of mentality would think like that or dare to even express that? So that's leading me up to one of the biggest half a dozen issues or problems unfolding here has to do with what you can only call industrial tourism or over-tourism. But the noise thing, if I can hear it, so can the birds. And if I can be annoyed by it, I'm not sure that birds would experience annoyance, but they would probably experience frustration at not being able to hear and communicate and be able to perceive their reality in the way that they really need to. Now, of course, all the people here, I won't name any names, but who love to give me shit about just the fact that I care, that I have the spine and the balls and the willingness to speak up and stand up for the right to exist and to not be fucked with for all of non-human life, especially the birds of New Zealand, whose islands this place really is. That's all who lived here, except for a bat and maybe some tuataras, which are like a little kind of a reptile. Other than that, there was no life forms here in the animal kingdom other than birds until the Maori came a few hundred years ago. So I perpetually am engaged in a battle of trying to create awareness in the people's minds here, because, like I said, I'm not your average acoustic person. I've got extremely good hearing. I'm not deaf. And I'm also very attentive. And I really love to hear nature sounds, birds, and the sound of the wind and the ocean and insects and stuff like that. So now you can hear a plane going over me right now. This show, I'm actually recording sitting inside my cottage because of the wind, and also to have a relatively an environment that's not totally shielded from anthropogenic noise, but that also doesn't have the normal ocean waves or other sounds that I would be sitting next to normally when I record a show here on the island. If you don't like the message, shoot the messenger. That's called an ad hominem argument. So I've had all kinds of stuff like that leveled at me. If people don't like what I say, they start pointing out the stuff. I've been accused of complaining about noise, but I've never complained. Complaining is like whinging. Complaining is like just going like, oh, I don't like that. Can you please make it go away? And I go like, no, I might object or express indignation or outrage or anger at violent, flagrant violations of noise etiquette. Like, for example, yesterday, on top of all the chainsaws and whippersnippers and wood chippers, this bloke pulls up to the house next door in a van, and I heard him coming down the street. I heard the stereo. It was a radio blasting so loud out of a vehicle, I could hear it like a block away. This dude rocks up in the driveway next door, sits there, opens all the doors on the van with his radio just blasting, just stupid idiot shit from somebody talking on the radio in Auckland. And then he's just standing there starting to unload all the stuff, and I just go, oh my God. And then luckily, he went and just kind of turned it down just a little bit, but it was still, I mean, who needs the radio going when they're not even in the van or even close to it? Or even at all, really. And, I mean, you know, and if you want to listen to it, why does it have to be so loud? People are like obsessed with listening to this shit. They need, what would they do? Go crazy if they don't hear someone blabbing all the time? To tell, because they're scared of their own thoughts or even the vacuum that would be there if nobody's pumping anything into their brain. I've heard arguments like, Jeff, you can't stop progress. But that makes me want to say, well, look, that's like saying you. So they're trying to say, you can't stop progress, so why try to do anything about it? About all this, these evil sources of the noise and stuff. And I go like, well, you know, you could say the same thing about aging, becoming infirm or, you know, unable to get around, unphysically adept. And I go like, well, you know, given that that's inevitable, so we think, why bother to do anything about that? Or, of course, what we call death, certainly inevitable, at least in the world that I know. So given that that's inevitable, why try to prolong life? Why try to be healthy and make yourself live as long as you can when you're just going to die anyway? Why not just go in and die? The same thing, that's exactly the same logic of why try to do anything about the noise levels or any other environmental problem if it's inevitable that progress is going to run over everything anyway. These are some very basic assumptions of the demented mental operating environment of man the wise. And then another argument is that, oh, well, these people making all this noise, they have to do something for a living. Yeah, but it's like the same argument could be given for working in a coal mine or digging a new coal mine or a gold mine or any other kind of extremely environmentally destructive thing. Where do you draw the line? How much money do people need? How uncreative can people be supported to be if they have no initiative to actually do something that's not environmentally destructive? Because I live on the road and I don't stay in the same place all the time, but I do come back to places that I really love, like especially here on Aotea, it makes me acutely aware of the changes that take place, because things like that become pretty much invisible to people that stay in the same place all the time. The slow incremental changes happen day by day. But when you're gone for a while and you come back, you really notice. That's what really shocked me about these ambient noise levels the past 2 or 3 days. Because like I was saying, is I've got very acute hearing. I pay attention to the sounds of nature. I want to hear them. I don't have a radio blasting in my ear. And I hardly even listen to music in the daytime anymore. Maybe at night with headphones on, but normally I just want to hear the sounds of nature. And my whole organism has become a very finely tuned instrument of sensation and perception of all kinds of dimensions and frequencies and wavelengths of information, both optical, acoustic, tactile, olfactory, non-sensory, all kinds of things that, because of the amount of time that I've spent in non-electric environments, and like for just mainly the few weeks where I just was in near Cradle Mountain in Tasmania, that was a very powerful time. I was around electricity, but very little. Certainly not on the grid or anything like that. So through a combination of where you are and how you take care of yourself and your deliberate and conscious abilities to fine-tune your own sensory and supersensory apparatus, you can become supersensitized to feeling the energies and vibrations of Mother Earth, Mother Nature, and feel and perceive the communications from birds and trees and plants and honeybees and butterflies and whales and dolphins and everybody. I think this is really our true nature, to be able to do this kind of thing. So like I was saying, I was really shocked in coming back to Great Barrier here to be in my very favorite place and to just have this constant, rather than a basic background of quiet punctuated by the occasional anthropogenic machine noise like a lawnmower or a chainsaw or an automobile, motorcycle, or a plane. Rather than that, which has been sort of the normal pattern with variations, this was really the first time, other than when there was a major construction project going on right in our backyard, other than that, this was the first time that it was like the opposite, that the norm for a whole day seemed to be continuous levels of obnoxious anthropogenic noise, punctuated only by brief intervals of relative silence, during which I could actually hear the bird songs and stuff. So I pay a lot of attention to this. I try to record bird sounds and songs quite often. And it's really, really, the past 3 days it's been just about impossible to get a bird song without some kind of anthropogenic noise in it. And that's very rare. This is the first time that's happened. And it's also like, even when I'm out camping out for a couple of days here in, I can hear a Kamata, hear a Tonga, different places I love to camp out here where I'm away from people. Still, the planes fly over so often and they're so loud that many, many, many times I'll pick up my camera to record a bird sound and then instantly a plane is there. So I've got a massive amount of documentation monitoring the sounds of all kinds of anthropogenic noise, the sound of planes, the sound of lawnmowers, the sound of helicopters, weed eaters, whippersnippers, all kinds of construction noise, people blaring the radio, people talking, dogs barking, every possible thing. And it's not really any one specific artifact of noise. It's the sum total. And the total amount statistically that tends to be going on at any given time. And it's also the fact that this is not a city by any means. It's an off-the-grid island where everyone has to generate their own electricity. And given I'm in the community on the island that is probably has the highest density, or the second highest density of people and traffic and holiday homes and all this different kind of stuff. It's like the high-end Sunset Strip region. So, and I'm kind of like the canary in the coal mine because I'm monitoring everything from here, which is, so hopefully everywhere else on the island it won't be quite as bad as here. And maybe another community like Tryphena, which is the main town where the primary wharf is, it may be worse there, but I've never lived there. I've never spent like a whole day there. I just go there to go shopping and stuff like that. But the whole point is, we don't have, there's no super highways with background noise. There's no city with rumbling. There's no massive industry or anything like that. So any sound that you do hear, any sound that is made that's anthropogenic, it kind of sticks out like a sore thumb against the background of the smooth, relatively quiet nature of here. The sound of the ocean with some birds. I think that's the normal background sound. So anything else is just a completely, it's like at right angles to that. And I'm particularly sensitive to the energy, partly because I know what it's coming from, and I know how stupid the reason behind almost all of it is. For example, sure, if you've got a lawn, it needs to be mowed now and then, but you don't have to mow it twice a week. And it's also possible to have what's called a no-mow lawn that can consist of beautiful native or non-indigenous ground covers. Even my beloved go-to cola, Centella Asiatica, is sort of like the ultimate ground cover, because not only does it cover a beautiful little carpet of shiny green leaves, but if you eat those leaves, it greatly enhances your longevity, your cognitive clarity, and about several dozen other metabolic and physiological beneficial effects. So why someone would want to have grass that you've got to mow, you can't eat it, it doesn't have flowers, all it does is it takes work. It might feel good to walk on. But when you could have a beautiful carpet of little plants that you didn't have to mow and that you could eat and be very, very healthy, that would seem to me to be the obvious choice. So here out on the Great Barrier especially, I've noticed how many people are literally obsessed with mowing their lawns. There's people that come out on the weekend and all they do is mow their lawn. And then they go home. They go back to Auckland to go to work. They don't come out here and rest or relax or go swimming. They come out here and mow their lawn and make noise for all their neighbors. And when you add in how many people do that, like right now, I'm within about 100 meters of probably a dozen and a half houses. And luckily, most of them, or at least probably half of them, are not currently inhabited because they're holiday homes. So in the summertime, between like the middle of December and beginning of February, which I'm never here during that time, but that would be when all these houses are probably full of people, and the noise level and everything would just, to me, be unbearable. Here comes the plane now. Yeah, I met with Fred Watson, the Australian astronomer who's behind the what supposedly the, I mean, to me it's all kind of a joke, the world's first urban dark sky sanctuary, which is kind of like an oxymoron in itself, but it's a peninsula where Palm Beach is up to the Barrenjoey Headland, where I went. Actually went there three times, the last two times by boat and bicycle, because it's quite pretty. There's a lighthouse. But there, even though it's within the city limits of Sydney, you can see the Milky Way. And so they want to get it declared an urban dark sky reserve, but I don't really understand why. I don't understand what difference that's going to make to anything. And the fact that they've got Great Barrier Island declared as an international dark sky sanctuary, and the people published a book. It's not about astronomy. It's not about what you can see when the sky is dark. It's about the dark sky sanctuary, all the instruments that they put out, and all the measurements they took of the light, and all this different kind of stuff. And I just go like, but look, it's a crock of shite that's meaningless, because all you're doing is trying to use that as something to draw people here to pay to go and do your good heavens dark sky experience and pay to go and look at the stars. So somebody here can make money off the tourists, just like the dairy cows that they actually are treated like. So to me, this is just me talking, but to me it makes a lot more sense to put your emphasis on, for example, what if people came here and wanted to hear the bird sounds? The bird singing, the tuis, the rurus, the kotaris, the albatross, the gannets, the yellowheads, the goldfinches, everybody. The beautiful little kakarikis. What if people came here wanting to hear that? So then, if they came here to listen to birds, or to try to, all these anthropogenic noises are just going to be a blight in their ear. But who cares? Who wants to do anything about that? Like with the dark sky thing, they're even talking about that where you go here on the island is these remote areas, like out in the national parks and stuff like that. But and you could do the same thing if you wanted to hear the birds. But why are these people unable to grasp the value of life, of our fellow life forms, who are almost exclusively suffering or being driven to extinction or possibly even just annoyed or frustrated by our activities, regardless of how they might seem to us? We might not notice any behavioral differences, but I think we should give them the credit that they too have a right to not be impinged upon by our activities. So I'm not sure what any sort of, I don't really like the word solution, or how we can, this is really stupid, fix it, how this can be fixed, or in New Zealand it's fixed. I don't know about any of that, but if, for example, people had to purchase a permit in order to generate large amounts of loud noise. Just like they had to do, people have to get a permit to build a fire if they want to burn something. So why can't we have a noise permit where people have to get a permit ahead of time if they want to use a loud lawnmower, a chainsaw, whippersnipper, any kind of construction machinery, wood chippers, anything like that, power tools that are above a certain sound level? You've got to get a permit to use these that you have to buy in advance. And if you fail to have this permit, you're in danger of getting a noise violation, a fine, just like you'd get if somebody caught you burning a big pile of shit when you weren't supposed to, or burning stuff that wasn't supposed to be burned, walking your dog on the beach, letting it run off the leash and munching on little baby birds. That's another thing that happens here. Driving on the wrong side of the road or driving drunk. Any kind of thing that you might get written up for, if they could make noise violations into something like that, that would be a good step. Not because it's necessarily going to be enforced, because that would be like everything. It doesn't matter what kind of laws or regulations exist. If it can't be enforced, it's meaningless. But it would create awareness about what people are doing, because now the whole thing with all the noise is just so blind and zombie-like. People just have it doesn't even cross their mind that the loud voice in which they're talking, walking down the street at night in a neighborhood or rocking up in a driveway with the radio and their van blasting so loud I could hear it a block away, it doesn't even cross their mind that somebody else might be hearing it or might be annoyed. And in some of the instances where I've actually brought this kind of thing to the people's attention, usually their reaction is they're just complete assholes. Like this guy named Johnny Scott, who's one of the building contractors here on the island. Last year, his crew was building a big, stupid, multi-million-dollar house behind us here. And they were working right outside the window of my cottage, literally not more than 2 meters from my kitchen window. And it was him and two other dudes, and they had some kind of really stupid industrial-level CD or DVD player there with them, blasting some just incredibly obnoxious stuff that I won't even call music. And I dared to ask him to turn it down, and he instantly got shitty with me and said something about me being American, and also about how like loud noise and stuff like that was actually good for you. And I go like, dude, it's good if you want to be like you, a brain dead zombie. So anyway, but I've got kind of a reputation here on this island for being, yes, the guy that doesn't like noise. And so when people say that to me, I go like, but look, so let me guess, you like it, right? You like to sit around and listen to chainsaws and whippersnippers and skill saws and people hammering and people shouting and horns blowing and loud motorcycles and planes that sound like chainsaws in the sky. You like that, right? You sit around and just actually, you know what I'm going to do? On your behalf, I'm going to create a CD that's going to be the acoustic landscape of Great Barrier Island. That's going to consist of a sound collage of all these beautiful sounds that these people love so much. And it's just going to be over and over and over again, just like that you would normally hear it. And so I think we'll see. I think it could be a bestseller. It'll be similar to like my friend Dave Stewart, who's one of the top birdsong recordists in Australia, who I've interviewed on my show. He has acquired so many really high quality recordings of truck sounds, just, you know, by accident in the process of trying to record birds. He said he's got so many truck and motor sounds that he could release a CD of that. You know, so maybe as a byproduct of I've recorded noise on purpose to monitor it and to sort of, you know, I could actually, with the data I've got from here, from the past 12 years, I could create a very scientifically valid model and report on how the relative sound levels have changed over the past decade and what the main contributing sources are, which are airplanes from the airlines here, construction noise, vehicles, lawn mowers and whippersnippers and chainsaws and motorcycles and the occasional stereo blasting or radio. That's pretty much the gist of the acoustic things. But this is just one of the five major issues afflicting Great Barrier Island. And again, it's still my very favorite place in all of New Zealand. But that's exactly why I'm so distressed and so concerned about how rapidly things seem to be changing here. There's starting to be way too many tourists. And other people have commented on this, that there's a certain faction of people that they think they want everybody and their brother to come here. Like that quote from Izzy Fordham, wanting all of the 1.6 million Aucklanders to come here and help protect the dark sky. Well, anytime more people come, they're going to be making light at night. I mean, how else are they going to get to the dark sky observing place? Are they going to walk there in the dark? No, if anybody, any people that are here, unless they go to bed at sunset, they're going to be generating more anthropogenic light. It's actually stupid. It's really stupid. So, but in addition to the noise thing, we've got the number of tourists that are coming. Like, I've had experiences just when I was here a few months ago. I was standing out at one of my favorite little spots where I go swimming, and I stand there and play my flute, and normally I can be there on the beach and there's nobody there. Well, anyway, I was there alone. This was like late afternoon, and all of a sudden this fat Chinese chick appears up on the dune. Nobody else on the beach that I could see either direction. And she sees me, and she walks straight toward me, all the way across, like 150 meters, across the dune and down across the beach and over exactly to me, in order to walk within like a meter of me, in order to walk around this rock. And I was so angry, I just about yelled at her, going like, you know, what the fuck are you doing? And then yesterday, I was standing out there in the same spot, and luckily I had had 45 minutes of solitude where I could swim naked as I do, unless people are around, play my flute, play my drum, have my little creature family out so they can see the ocean. And I'm playing my drum, and I'm just about done, and I turn around and look, and there's these people sitting up on the dune looking at me. And I just go, oh my God. And then, yesterday, I rode the bicycle, my first bicycle ride on the island here, about 6.5 kilometers over to the Kaitoki River, which is a really beautiful place to watch the sunset over Hirakamata, or Mount Hobson, which is the largest, tallest mountain on the island. I was sitting there at my favorite little spot, getting ready to burn some sage and play my flute, and then this big four-wheel drive pulls by. But instead of keeping on going, they pull over on the other side of the bridge, and they get out, and I go, oh my God. It was these people that came over on the boat with me. But even though they were sitting across from me, I was not inspired to talk with them because they just had bad vibes. I just felt bad energy from these people, so I didn't make any kind of connection. They were obviously tourists. And here they were in their big old four-wheel drive with all the shit stacked on top. And I guarantee you, the only reason they stopped was because they saw me sitting there. So they pulled over, and the chick walked back towards me across the bridge with her camera and stood there and started taking all these pictures, and they just lingered and lingered, and they had a big old dog. And I never spoke to them. In fact, I felt like cussing at them, but I didn't say anything, but I certainly didn't look at them. But I did bad vibe them. But I guarantee you, the only reason they stopped is because they saw me sitting there, and they go like, oh, well, this is a tourist thing. We'll stop and do this tourist thing because, look, there's that guy. And this has happened to me before. Like, once on the Tongariro crossing, I was standing there taking a photo, and I turned around, and I go, fuck! There was like two or three people standing less than a meter right behind me, waiting to stand in the little spot where I was standing to take a photo. So these people are like sheep. Well, I mean, you know, not to denigrate sheep, because I like sheep, but it's like, they without even thinking, they just do exactly what they're like lemmings, the mythical lemming that does exactly what everybody else does without even thinking. So that's the kind of people that are being drawn to Aotea now, and apparently there's no limit to it. This is almost the dead of winter, but there's still way more people here than I've ever seen before. More work going on, more construction, more tourism, plane flights. And I really fear what this place might be like next year when they have the America's Cup, the sailboat race that's going to be in Auckland for the first time since 2000 when I first came. SeaLink, the boat company, is talking about building a new building. And I guarantee you, all the tourism people here on Great Barrier are just trying to do everything in their power to draw as many of those people that are going to come from all over the world for the America's Cup. They want them all to also come out here so they can see the darks, so they can pay to go and stand out and look at the stars. How about that? That's a great deal. And, you know, but I'm going, one of the things I've thought of is that I learned from my friend who's a pilot down on the South Island that you can't just replace the propeller on a plane. Because I thought that if you were able to exchange propellers, you might put a different design on there that could lower the noise and increase the efficiency. But he said that that's basically not possible, that the propeller is like an integral part of the plane motor itself. So the only solution is to get new planes that are quieter, because these are old and super loud. But they cost like $2 or $3 million a piece. So my suggestion is that the Auckland Council either subsidize or, better, just pay for some new planes for the two airlines here that'll greatly reduce the noise. How about that? They can use all the money from those resource allocation consents that are 10 grand apiece. They probably get who knows how many of those. They probably make several million dollars a year just from that alone. So why not kick that back if they really care about Aotea as a beautiful nature off-the-grid destination? What about putting your money where your mouth is instead of filling it full of Roundup and Brodificum? So you've got the noise, you've got the over-tourism, you've got the poisoning that is coming here. They've already nuked Rakitu Island twice with Brodificum. There's not 1080 being used, but that could actually come in at any time. Also, they use Pendone on the bunnies and Roundup on the dunes, and who knows what else. There's also a dredging operation that's been going on since 2009, where they're digging up silt and muck from the Auckland Harbor, the Hauraki Gulf in there, and transporting it out to a destination not more than about 20 kilometers east of where I'm sitting right now. And so they just amped up the amount of material that's being shipped. So why they're putting it there, I have no idea. But this is all stuff that's adding up to degrade the environmental and ecological harmony and stability of this whole island and the surrounding marine environment. We already had a report from Massey University researchers 3 years ago that the what had been very high dolphin populations, bottlenose and spinners, off of the Bay of Islands up near Kerikeri, that those numbers of dolphins had dwindled, and they thought that they had pretty much relocated to off the east coast of Great Barrier Island because it's a much quieter place. But if we drive them from here, where will they go then? And people haven't been seeing many, many dolphins over here, not in the past year, according to what I've been told. I hope to see my friends Aihi Papahu Tahora Paikia Kahola Naigion Katsakaha Wananga. So the stars have become a marketing tool out here. Also, construction. That's one of the biggest blights of stupid assholes with too much money building multi-million dollar holiday homes in lots where there really shouldn't be anything, often where they've demolished or moved a perfectly good little batch that was there. So there's now major construction projects going on. And yesterday when I did my 13-kilometer bicycle ride, I'd say about two-thirds of all the vehicles that I passed on the road were construction vehicles. So maybe the construction people can be levied up a huge fee for road maintenance here. Anyway, this is all stuff sure to endear me with most of the local people, and especially the bureaucrats. But I've got to fight the good fight on behalf of Mitakaiye Ilyasin, and in order to try to lessen the severity of the purification so that the people of one heart of all the kingdoms of life might be nurtured as the seeds of a new creation. This is Jeff Phillips Weferson signing off from Aotea, Kia Manuia, He Wahi Tapu, Wahi Arahi Mai, Ingya Tahora Mingya, Ehi Mingya, Aniwa Niwa Mingya, Mitakaiye Ilyasin Mingya, Atua Kaitiaki. the new motto of New Zealand I saw at the airport is, we must be Tiaki. It's the second half of Kaitiaki. It means a guardian. This is, they're only now talking about doing what I've been talking about for 19 years traveling around New Zealand. Don't just talk about it. Like the proverb says in the Bible, by their fruits you shall know them. Let your fruit be being a true guardian in action and in what you don't do, not in what you say. Good day. Those beautiful sounds that you're hearing is a montage of sounds that I've recorded basically from the deck of the cottage where I'm staying on Great Barrier Island. As it sounds to me, the sound of chainsaws, wood chippers, whippersnippers, lawnmowers, planes, helicopters, you name it. This is the current soundscape of Great Barrier Island from Medlands Beach.
Thank you. Aussie Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.TV.